Hello and welcome to the Majlis, Radio Free Radio Liberty's current affairs podcast focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis and Radio Free Radio Liberty's media manager for South and Central Asia here in Washington, D.C. The project Seneca just concluded its big gathering in Brussels. It's a European program aimed at strengthening and energizing EU and Central Asia relations with a particular focus on education, climate change, connectivity, integration, etc. The initial project was launched on January 1st, 2018 with $1.2 billion budget. So we thought it's time to look back to see how far we have come and what's next on the list of priorities, challenges, and opportunities going forward. To discuss these, I'm joined by Dr. Michael Kading, co-head of the project, who is also professor of European politics at the University of Duisburg, Essen, Germany. Meir Zohid Rahimov is with us, who's from the Academy of Science of Uzbekistan, Sultan Akimbekov, Director of Institute of Asian Studies in Kazakhstan, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today.
Thank you. Hello.
Very nice to have you. So I understand, Dr. Kading, you have to leave soon. So let's talk to you for a moment, and then we will continue the discussion as Central Asians here on the Majlis. So, Dr. Kading, I have been scanning your project over the past couple of days. You have an ambitious goal and a sort of timeline. Tell us about what is this all about?
Well, in the end, it's about strengthening and energizing the future relationships between Central Asia and Europe. And the way we want to achieve this is by setting up network activities. So we had a series of meetings in the region, in Central Asia, but most importantly also here in Europe, in the European Union, in Brussels specifically, where a couple of months ago the new Central Asia strategy of the European Union was published. Next to these networking activities and high-level meetings, we have the very much the idea to bring scientists and think tankers, politicians, policymakers together, thinking around the future of EU-Central Asia relations. And, well, based or in preparation of this, we have done a lot of research as well, mapping exercises of basically looking into Central Asian studies in Europe and European studies in Central Asia. We designed a database, which is now online, so we have also social media accessibility to everything we have been doing over the last couple of months in order to inform the public, the wider interested public in Central Asia, in Europe specifically, about what is there in terms of research, but what is there also in terms of thinking around the future of EU-Central Asia relations.
Okay, if you would like to go a little bit into items in the project, as far as I could understand from the papers I have read so far, beyond networking, you are talking about some educational programs. You have some integration, border management discussion going on. Any details, any specifics on those, and how you plan to implement that?
Well, in the end, first of all, it's more about identifying policy areas that are considered to be those areas of the future, such as climate, such as water, such as also topics from maybe the past, such as security, terrorism, cybersecurity. All these issues have been addressed, as you said, by individual papers. And it's not so much about now giving concrete advice how to develop these policies. It's more the exercise of thinking and bringing together, first of all, the different views, because European scholars might look into these aspects very differently in comparison to, let's say, Central Asian scholars, if you want to put this more globally. And I think that's already the biggest added value of whatever Seneca has been doing so far, is to get away from this domination of Western thinking around a couple of topics and actually to give also the possibility of many other excellent researchers in the area of Central Asia to share their views on topics where we agree, Europeans as well as Central Asians, to be of key importance for the future relations between the EU and Central Asia.
You said where you agree with Central Asia. So what are the areas where you agreed so far?
What are areas where we agreed so far? I think it's not about agreeing. It's about identifying the areas as being key in order to move ahead with development in understanding on the European side, and also development on the Central Asian side. So climate change is clearly something that can be interpreted very differently. There are different challenges in Europe in comparison to Central Asia. We have agriculture here in Europe. We have much less people, for example, working still in the agriculture sector. In Central Asia, this is still a sector where many people are earning their bread and butter, and water will here and is already and will further become, specifically with the climate change, one of the continued key priorities. So this has to be recognized here by the Europeans, by the policymakers, if they want to assist, want to help. The dialogue is needed. Seneca provides the dialogue, and if Central Asian actors, policymakers, think tankers are interested in joining forces, this is a way where we could then work together.
You know, over the past couple of days, since people learned that Bruce will be among you in this gathering, people were reaching out to us asking to raise certain things which are important for them. And I specifically want to mention one message that we got from Kazakhstan. They were saying that human rights has to be part of any project that Europe is thinking about Central Asia, where it is on your agenda.
Yeah, that's clearly something that is critically assessed as well, let's put it that way, because human rights is also a concept, first of all, that these are universal rights, that's for sure, but they have to be also accepted as such. In Europe, it is part of all the constitutions, it's part of the EU treaties, of the Charter of Fundamental Rights, so this is clearly the canon, the values according to which European policymakers like to act and like to implement. It doesn't always work, huh? To be very frank. We do have compliance issues with regard to human rights and related facts also in Europe. That having said that, obviously, human rights from this concept is understandably an issue in all five different societies to different extent. There are different challenges these different societies face. I think that's already important for Europeans to be aware of. And then also the answers are very different. We see constant changes now. The scenery, the political landscape looks very different every month. We don't really know what the future will bring. But yes, human rights is clearly something that we have been addressing in our mapping, analysis and recommendations exercise within Seneca.
To what kind of responses you are getting from Central Asia on those points, especially on human rights? And I think you also have some projects to improve the political system in the region, I guess.
I think it's not about us in Seneca thinking of how to change political systems. I mean, that's not at all our intention, and that would be a very colonialistic way of looking at things, specifically if us Europeans come over to the region and tell them how to reform their political systems. No, not at all. We have a model, and this model competes to some extent with other models that are worldwide accessible. There is a Chinese model, there's an American model, there's a Russian model, not only with regard to human rights, but also with regard to addressing issues of security, of environment, of climate change, etc. And us Europeans, I think what is important in Seneca, it provides a potential dialogue between and to understand the European model, the European answers, how we address problems which we share and actually have in common to many respects, but actually in the end leaving up to Central Asian societies to pick and choose if they want to compare the different models and then to make a final call for themselves. It's not about us giving any directives. It's not about us inducing any change.
Yeah, I think I used the wrong word. Maybe helping in a way Central Asians to improve the system. Of course, they are in the learning process. When you talk to Central Asians, they would always say, we are just 25 years old. So yeah, there are some learning process going on in Central Asia. In terms of that, what is that you are doing, or what was that you are advising?
No, exactly. So that's clearly something we are very much aware of, that there is a very high percentage in the population also of young people, and this is basically also increasing steadily. And for this very much reason, we actually, what we have been doing is not only putting on papers, but we actually have used social media. We have actually made a big effort to not only have English accessible information, but actually also have it translated, these things in the lingua franca of the region, as we learned here Russian, to give also to spread the word as much as possible and to give as many people as possible in the region interested, be they stakeholders, be they policymakers. We have interviewed with many civil servants also in all five countries, that they have access to the information which we have been sharing over the last 2 years.
Yeah. In the list of the recommendations that I have seen in one of your papers, you also mentioned something in the line of communication in local languages.
Yes.
What is that? Can you please tell us a little bit more?
Well, I think that's the ongoing challenge we have here in Brussels. I mean, you know that we have 24 languages officially recognized in the European Union. So we are very much aware of the fact of having this labyrinth and diversity of languages. And we respect these languages. We have every document translated in the respective languages. When our heads of state or government meet, when our ministers meet, even at expert level, in our meetings, we have always interpretation services and translation services. That is very expensive. At the same time, we notice that we do this in order to reach out, first of all, to reach and communicate, to have a message that also arrives at the recipient, at the citizen, and that comes at a cost. You have to invest in this if you want to explain what we are actually doing in Brussels to member states' citizens. And that's this exact same story for Central Asia. Why should it be any different? I mean, also there you have a lingua franca Russian, but at the same time, the experience with the Soviet Union and Russia has been very mixed. The history has been very, let's say, not always very easy. So the language, yes, is a communication tool, but actually it'd be much more accessible with reaching out with your message if you actually make the extra effort and to go one step further and make the interpretation or the translation of documents in the respective dialect.
I mean, this idea of communication in local languages, what I was trying to say is, was there anything suddenly occurred to you that, yes, we have to do this? I mean, there was any kind of tipping point which realized you have to focus on this aspect?
It was actually because of our Central Asian partners. It was about us having a board, an advisory board, with advisory board members from the region advising us, if you want to reach out and communicate with the people on the ground, you have to make that extra effort. So it was actually not us Europeans having the idea. I mean, I sold you now, basically, or I linked this idea of communication and made the point very clear by making the example with the European Union. So it became very clear to us very quickly that this is worth the extra effort. But at the same time, it was not us Europeans knowing that from the beginning. That is clearly was part of the learning curve.
And also among your recommendations, you have a huge portion devoted on integration, border management. When you talk about integration, I also cannot ignore thinking about these road networks, transportation networks, where you have China really working with big money in Central Asia. So how do you see what role EU can play in that, and why you think you are even an actor there in this crowded field?
What we could say is, if you want to, I mean, in the end, I do not have an answer myself on this, but what I can tell you is that in the conferences we organized, and throughout the 2 years we organized 5 or 6 conferences in the end, that has been one of the panel's questions. It was in the end about more and better connectivity between Europe and Asia. What could that mean for Central Asia in practice? And there we had leading scholars from Sekalu, for example, or the ambassador at large for connectivity from the European External Action Service, the ambassador of Kazakhstan. So them, for example, talking and discussing very much the issue of connectivity and here also road projects. This is something I could refer to as one of our activities. But I'm sorry, now I have to run.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Kaden. This is also time for me to recap the discussion here, that today we are talking about the European project called Seneca in regard to Central Asia. And I'm joined to discuss this project with Dr. Michael Kading, co-head of the project. He's also professor of European politics at the University of Duisburg, Essen, Germany. Unfortunately, Dr. Kading had to leave, but we continue to have Mirzohid Rahimov from the Academy of Science of Uzbekistan, Sultan Akimbekov, Director of Institute of Asian Studies from Kazakhstan, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owaziyai, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing Central Asia and EU relations in the light of this project called Seneca. Welcome back, colleagues. So I think, Bruce, I might need your help here to a little bit intervene whenever you feel you need to intervene, because I might not be able to grasp the whole picture of what you guys have been talking about in Brussels over the past couple of days. But let me open this with one question. So let's start with Mr. Rahimov. You were in Brussels and you have been attending all these gatherings there. So what you are going away with? What's your takeaway from this gathering?
Well, this is today's conference was a result of several years partnership of the consortium of universities and research institutes from European Union as well as from Central Asia. So because it's final conference, then there was very much work done together in strong partnership with the academics from different universities, different countries. And we saw a number of discussion. There was a number of publication describing different issues, Central Asia studies in Europe and also European studies in Central Asia.
And Mr. Akimekov, what are you taking away from this gathering?
Well, I am a member of the advisory board of this Seneca project and not involved maybe directly in this work. But from my point of view, I have visited some events of this organization. It's very important for better understanding each other, because for us, for example, is because you know that there are such positions that for EU maybe Central Asia is on the periphery of the attention, and so that for us it's interesting that EU have what EU going to do in our region, what is the presence, is it really interested in development of Central Asia, or maybe is a part of some common strategy in the, I don't know, whatever. And of course, Seneca, it's important because maybe very interesting that I have maybe participated in a lot of different meetings, different events, and maybe here it's so a lot of very qualified academician, politics, diplomats, former diplomats, real diplomats, and so that, of course, this is absolutely another quality of discussion, especially in formal way, I think.
Hmm. As we were talking with Dr. Kading, you know, they have a couple of recommendations, couple of plans and projects on EU's agenda when it comes to Central Asia. Just the kind of Central Asian question here. So where your heart lies, where Europe should be more active than it has been so far?
No, it seems to me that for Europe may be more active, especially in the quality of educational process. Of course, Europe may be possible for Europe to play a role, especially in the connectivity process between European different structure, because you know that European system of organization means a lot of structure, institution, think tanks, and a lot of them. And so that for Central Asia, maybe for us, it's not we maybe not have enough such kind of information, and for us and for Europe is supporting some institutional progress in the Central Asia is very important. And of course, also the security issues, climate changes, especially water problem, for example, for Central Asia is absolutely important question. And I think that this is, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, you are not new in these topics, but again, since especially you were in this gathering over the past couple of days, let me put this question to you. You know, Michael has mentioned that, you know, just we heard from Mr. Akimbekov, the topic of connectivity and security. When we talk about these two topics, for example, what it means to Central Asia and what it means to Europe, are they on the same page or they look into these things from different perspectives?
I mean, if they were looking at it from different perspectives, I think, you know, the Seneca project and the fact that they're able to have representatives from both Europe and Central Asia meet together has kind of narrowed the differences in the way they looked at this. There was a lot of talk at this conference, for instance, that it was one continent. You know, they were trying to connect one continent. So they're trying to get beyond the idea that this is part of its Europe and part of its Asia. They're stressing the fact that really they're all part of the Eurasian continent, and that there's a lot of ties that bind the two regions together for thousands of years, actually. You know, that's part of the connectivity issue. It's not so much of, like, you know, something new as redoing something that already existed, but doing it at a modern level. So I think the views that the two sides had coming in are now much closer than they were. You know, I mean, I went to the Riga conference. That was the first one I went to last April 2018, and I can see that the way they approach these topics are much closer now than they were, you know, 18 months ago when we first started doing this. So there's a lot of understanding of that, and a lot of things that the European side has learned from listening to what the Central Asian partners said, what they expect from this, how they view these projects working. You know, because you can't, when the European representatives are working on their own, of course they had this view of this is what Central Asia needs and this is how it should work out when we implement this project. But the input they got from Central Asia has caused them to revise their plan so that it's more in harmony with what the Central Asians are looking for.
I know, Bruce, you might have some questions to our panelists here, but feel free when you do. But let me continue the discussion with our guest from Uzbekistan, Mr. Rahimov. Mr. Rahimov, there are so many other actors in your region, Russia being traditional actor there, and China kind of coming in. And you already have a number of regional but smaller actors. And of course, also those actors too have projects which overlaps with some of what Europeans are trying to do there, what Dr. Kading was talking about. So how does the Europeans compare with some of the existing projects? Is it overlapping? Is it contradicting? Is there any point in which you could see there might be a clash on our way?
Well, I think this is a very fundamental question. The problem is, last 3,000 years, Central Asia was in the mix of civilization, in the mix of the crossroads, and of course, it was a lot of intellectual exchange. So, just Bruce mentioned about the connectivity. I could say different kind of connectivity was very much in the history of Central Asia. The first, second is, you are right, nowadays a number, let's say, main actors in Central Asia, they have a number of multilateral institutions. It's SCO, CIS, Belt and Road, Central Asia plus Japan, Central Asia plus Korea, and now it's Central Asia plus France, and so on and so forth. But from the perspective of positive transformation of Central Asia, it is very good when all these projects will go toward the construction development of the region. In the case of EU, it's definitely supporting communication, supporting education and science is very important for human capital development in Central Asia. So why we are now living in the very interdependent world. So we see one process in one region could affect it another. So in the case of European experience, I could say, for instance, European university system is very much relevant to modern time education reforms in Central Asia, in particular in Uzbekistan. You know, last 3 years, a big change in the country. And for instance, it was opened more than almost 15 international branches. And for Uzbekistan, is now priority internationalization of education and science, which is, I think, very important in the globalized time. And of course, all of them is a positive. So in the point of Uzbekistan and other Central Asia republics, not the contradiction, but cooperation is essential between the main actors in Central Asia.
Bruce, anything from your perspective in terms of the questions to our guests? But also, since Mr. Akinbekov, you are the board member of Seneca.
Yes.
So from your perspective, and also there is a timeline, I believe, some sort of timeline. I'm not sure about what is that, 2023, I guess. So what's the ideal outcome you could think of this project in Central Asia?
If we are looking for Seneca project, I think that it depends from European side, because we don't know exactly. But from my point of view, the idea which made through this project is very important for us, because network really exists. And so that we have contacts not only inside Central Asian countries, but also with European, but I want to stress that also eastern part of Europe, so that the Poland, Baltic countries, which has made a lot of transformation through the after falling down Soviet Union, it's a very big way, I think. And so that for us, such kind of network means that we still exist and we still we are continuing to contact, continuing to work maybe together. So that as a main result of Seneca project is a working network at all. And maybe, of course, the European Union wants to support this project, I don't know. But if not, we will continue our work, I think.
On the education, Mr. Rahimov, you since you are coming from Academy of Science of Uzbekistan, on the education, what's happening now and what do you think the ideal roadmap should be when it comes to educational exchange between Europe and Central Asia as part of this project?
You know, actually, like Sultan, I'm also a member of international board of this project. As being a student of history and international studies, I also am supporting that the education should be priority between Central Asia and EU relation, like between Central Asia, United States, or India, or other countries as well. So here, of course, the sustainability of network, I think it will be very useful to continue such kind of program. It is because it's useful for academics in Central Asia, be co-authors or partners of the different publication or papers together with European partners. So the level of academic approach in this level will be increased. And secondly, it's important to widening the teaching mobility programs. It will be useful for Central Asia experts on EU or other issues to come in European universities to make some, let's say, fellowship program. At the same time, it will be useful when the professor from EU countries coming and delivering different kind of lectures in Central Asia. Because in Central Asia countries, all universities nowadays try to be involved in different kind of internalization of the higher education.
Okay. Bruce, have I missed anything?
No. I think that covered the ground well.
Great. Okay, thank you very much. Mirzo Rahimov from the Academy of Science of Uzbekistan and Sultan Akinbekov, Director of Institute of Asian Studies from Kazakhstan, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia, blog, Kishlok Uwazi. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.